This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Culminating more than a week of events, from the March for Science to the People's Climate March, will be May Day. May 1st has traditionally been a celebration of workers' rights that originated in the 1880s in Chicago. In the past decade or so, though, immigrant workers have marked May Day to draw attention to their struggles and rights. And this year, given the extreme attacks on immigrants and working-class Americans from the White House and Republican Party, May Day is shaping up to be a massive political statement. Activists in many cities have called for a general strike. In Seattle, Washington, City Council member Kshama Sawant, who was elected on a socialist platform, introduced a resolution for city workers to be allowed to take May Day off without penalty. Sawant has become one of the most prominent spokespeople in the nation for May Day actions, and she now joins me to discuss the importance of the general strike. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So the last time we spoke was right before the Women's Day March, which was the first of the many major mass street mobilizations we've seen throughout the country since the inauguration of Donald Trump. How do you put May Day into the context of all of the various marches that we've been seeing on the streets, not just of Washington, D.C., but in cities like Seattle, L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, et cetera?
Thank you, Sonali, for raising that. I mean, I think the examples that you used really highlight the historic period we're in, where an entire generation of millennials is in one stage of revolt or another, really questioning not only Trump's administration, the billionaire-backed agenda, but also the capitalist system itself. So I think that we're seeing a historic period where somebody like Trump, you know, remember when he got elected, the day after he was elected, there was a sense of despair and sadness and hopelessness. And look where we are today. Virtually every policy or executive order that he has tried to push for has been pushed back on. And the main component of this pushback has been ordinary working people, young people, students revolting in one way or another. I mean, a prominent example of this is the defeat of the Muslim travel ban, the attempted ban, because of the nonviolent shutdowns of airports, including in SeaTac here in Seattle. And I was there from beginning to end, and it was just a really inspiring action by regular people, none of them in any way seasoned activists, who were there just because they found the idea of a travel ban on any human being stomach turning. And then since then, we've seen, as you said, the Science March, where scientists and engineers, not your typical protesters or activists out there, because they are finding the attacks on science and science funding abhorrent, correctly so, and not to mention the fight against climate change. So I think May Day, May 1st, in addition to its historic connotations and significance, stands in that context of an ongoing revolt. And I would urge everybody who is watching this to see May 1st, next Monday, not as a culmination of the resistance, but in many ways, a historic marker, you know, something that can launch a summer of resistance, not only against Trump, but against the billionaire class, against the ruling elite, and against the status quo that clearly is not working for so many of us.
Let's talk about what has been unfolding in Seattle in the lead up to May Day. I mentioned the city council resolution that you introduced, asking that city workers be able to take that day off without penalty. I understand that was voted on and passed. How important is it for, you know, a council member like you, who stands very firm on workers' rights, to, in a way, push this elected body to endorse such a political action?
I think that's a very important question. I mean, as a socialist, as an activist, as an organizer and a member of the labor movement, I can say that, quite frankly, that the electoral terrain, honestly, is not the most favorable terrain for social change, meaning that we have no alternative but to build a mass political struggle on the ground, on the streets, on university campuses, in workplaces. We need the labor movement and labor union members to become a backbone of this social struggle that needs to happen from below, and it cannot artificially be done by holding elected offices. However, at the same time, I think we should reject the false dichotomy that the movement can only be built on the streets, and we should reject, if we are genuine activists, that we should reject electoral office. Absolutely not. I think that is a false dichotomy. As a matter of fact, what we've been hoping ever since I was elected the first time in 2013, we've been hoping that what we are doing here through my office and my organization, Socialist Alternative, which has been really at the forefront of the struggle in Seattle and in getting me elected in the first place, we're hoping to show what an elected official who's truly accountable and rooted in social movements, in labor, in the labor movement, in community organizing, what that elected office actually looks like. And that is why we put this resolution forward. And this resolution is an example of what we could do if our movement got our own candidates elected, but candidates that could be held accountable, not just candidates who run through the movement, use the movement to raise their own political careers and then betray. You know, that's a very important component. The question is, how do we hold elected officials accountable? And this is part of what we are trying to demonstrate. And that is why it was very, very important for me to bring this resolution forward so that City of Seattle employees are given the day off without retaliation. And I can tell you that initially there was no appetite among the corporate politicians on this city council to pass anything like it, but they were forced to vote yes unanimously on it because there's a real surge from below. And we're using our office, our city council office, my office, as a platform, as an amplified voice for those social movements. And as a matter of fact, we don't just want to have mass protests and actions and rallies, all peaceful actions on May Day. We also want to carry the conversation forward to win tangible gains. So just a couple of examples is, one, we are pushing right now for a tax on the rich, tax on wealthy people in Seattle. And one of the main points of action, you know, sort of the to-do list that we want to present to activists, that May Day is not the end, but the beginning, is in Seattle. We want to build a larger movement. Already the movement has gained a lot of momentum, but a movement to tax the rich in Seattle. And I think it can happen, but we need to keep pushing. And furthermore, because of the organizing that we've done on the ground around May Day of this year, there's now a momentum building around demanding that May 1st is declared as a workers' holiday throughout Seattle. And so hopefully we can build enough momentum for that as well, so that before May 1st next year, we will have declared May 1st the day off for all workers in the city every year. I don't know if that will happen or not, but it is certainly a goal to fight towards. And the significance of fighting for something like that is the defiance that and unity that the movement needs to build in order to win something like this, because I can tell you the entire political establishment, the Democratic Party in Seattle, will be quite strongly opposed to something like that.
Right. Now, you've also been coming under fire for some comments that you made about the kinds of actions you would like to see in Seattle on May Day. You said, I understand, that I'm not saying no to any nonviolent actions, that you wouldn't rule out that there might be airport disruptions, freeway disruptions, but I noticed that you used the terms nonviolent, and you've been denounced by the law enforcement as basically fomenting dangerous, provocative actions. Why?
I think it is one of the things that corporate media and even the political establishment, it's not just the media, it's also city council members and the mayor of Seattle, actually, Ed Murray, who have gone on record either suggesting or overtly saying that there could be violence and how horrible that would be. As you said, Sonali, I have made it very clear, and it's not just me, our entire movement, which is made up of regular people with families and children and grandparents, have made it very clear that we are absolutely against any kind of violence. And as a matter of fact, the best way to prevent any violence on any protest action is for regular working people to come out in big numbers. And it's quite offensive for the corporate media to keep, clickbaiting this whole question of violence, because more than any other protest, May 1st, which has historically been an immigrant rights day in America, more than any other day of protest, May 1st brings out families with children, babies, and the elderly. So I find it quite offensive and disgraceful that the media will keep saying violence, violence, violence when it's regular people with their families who will come out. And the reason they will be out on May Day is because they are going to peacefully protest against the extreme violence of ICE raids, detentions, and deportations that rips families apart. If you want to talk about violence, let's talk about the violence of ripping families apart, of taking parents away from their children. Let's talk about the violence of denying healthcare and education rights to millions, tens of millions of young Americans. Let's talk about the violence of the bombing in Syria and Afghanistan and untold numbers of countries. Let's talk about the violence that this ruling elite, both Democrats and Republicans, despite their differences, have been responsible for. And then we can have a discussion about violence. But as far as May Day is concerned, the movement will be out in large numbers, carrying out a peaceful but a very firm demonstration against Trump's policies, especially about ICE raids.
Now, it's not just Seattle, of course. Washington, D.C. is where the main march is going to be in the country, but major cities a little further away from D.C. will be having their own rallies. Now, I understand that it's become this day to mark immigrant workers' rights, but are cities explicitly calling for a general strike where basically you shut down the city, and that means you don't go to work, the trains don't run, the freeways basically are blocked. And I'm wondering if there are any particular cities that you are seeing that a general strike could actually become a reality on Monday, May Day?
I think that's a very important question to consider. I as you said, I think Seattle will probably not be the biggest city of protest. Probably the biggest protest will be maybe in DC, but I think California is definitely on the forefront because of the history of the immigrant community and the rich radical activist history of the immigrant community, especially the courage shown by undocumented immigrants in California. I think that is going to put California ahead of all of us. And as a matter of fact, one of the harbingers of this discussion around strike actions on May Day has been from workers in California. There was one key day where 6,000 janitorial workers at their, this is SEIU, U.S. Service Workers West, who had their regular union meeting, and then one of the members got up and made an impassioned speech about how can we just stand back when our communities are under direct attack and you don't know when you open the door who's going to be, whether it's your family and friend or it's going to be an ICE official. And so they spontaneously took a vote, unanimous vote, to strike these 6,000 workers, and they started chanting huelga, huelga, meaning strike in Spanish. It's a really inspiring video to watch. And then flowing from that, 340,000 workers represented by food chain unions and janitorial and custodial staff unions have now declared that they will be going on strike. The president of the teachers union in Los Angeles demanded that the school district give the day off to all teachers and students. So I imagine that we will have a general strike-like situation in some cities. I don't think it is going to be in all cities, but I think what's most paramount about this is not technically whether there will be a general strike in many cities, which I don't expect. However, what's important, what's paramount, is that the word strike is coming back into our vocabulary. And that is the most important thing, because at the end of the day, if we want to make any social change for the better, let alone replace capitalism with a humane system like socialism, then history tells us that without working class people coming together as working people, regardless of ethnic or race or gender identification, or regardless of all those differences, if we come together as working people and withhold our productive capacity and refuse to go to work, then it brings the profit machine of the ruling class to a shutdown. And that is what's potent about strike action. So my hope is that May 1st will be a little bit of a practice session, almost like experiencing the power of going on strike and then building it to a crescendo, as I said, in a summer of resistance, where we can actually have strike action after strike action, have the new generation of workers start experiencing the power of it, and then go towards real general strike so that we can really push for some deep fundamental change.
Right. I mean, as all of these things are happening, as people are getting ready for these May Day events, in Washington, D.C., the political establishment and Donald Trump are moving extremely fast. They are claiming they have a deal on health care. They are getting ready to rewrite the tax code in favor of the rich. They're getting ready to give away federal lands for drilling to fossil fuel companies. They are not even stopping to take a breath. And so that urgency is quite strong. And it's a matter of how fast people can mobilize to send a really strong message to stop this train wreck. It will have been just over 100 days that Trump has been in office when the May Day marches happen. And I'm wondering, finally, if you think that he will notice and acknowledge, maybe through his Twitter account, that people are really upset and angry, because after all, it was on an economic populist platform, in part, that he managed to fool a lot of voters into voting for him.
Yeah, I think we should expect some angry tweets from him. He will acknowledge it, but not as if to say, well, I bow to the power of the people, but more like he'll be outraged. And you're right. Trump ran on a right populist platform and conned a lot of people into voting for him. But what we're seeing now, after the big debacle on Trump care, and I know he's saying that he has an alternative to that, but I'm skeptical of how much he can push, given the revolt, including by Trump and other Republican voters, against replacing the Affordable Care Act with something worse. I mean, it was that revolt that really pushed their backs against the wall and gave them a bitter defeat on Trump care. But now what you're seeing through his new proposals on a tax plan to give tax cuts to the rich and to corporations, eliminating the estate tax, and the proposals that we will see related to the budget, I think what we're seeing is that right populist con man Donald Trump realizing that he's not able to win on those fronts, and then taking steps to distract people from the Trump care defeat and starting to attack Syria and Afghanistan. So, you know, that was a very predictable move on his part. You know, this despotic bigot who fails in his so-called campaign promises, now starting to distract away by attacking other countries. And then the other move you're seeing is the ongoing transition from being a right populist to, more or less adapting himself to a standard Republican establishment agenda. And by saying standard, I don't mean anything good. I mean, business as usual is really bad for most of us, because we are the ones who suffer, and the wealthy and Wall Street get a free ticket to paradise. And so that is in no way a good thing for us, but it is showing for us, the lesson to draw from this, his transition, at least attempted transition from right populist to establishment Republican, it shows that he is getting pushed back by our ongoing action. So the message I would derive from that is a very positive message, that let's get to work organizing ourselves and building a mass resistance, a sustained and united resistance, because that is what has pushed his back against the wall so far. And we can actually keep doing it. We can give him a defeat the way that movements gave Richard Nixon a huge defeat and won historic gains while he was in the White House, not because he supported them, but because he couldn't stop those changes from happening. So we could do that as well. But one key thing that we need to remember, if we are to win against Trump, our movement cannot let itself be bounded by what's acceptable to corporate Democrats as well. So at the end of the day, if we want to win single-payer healthcare, if we want to win a progressive tax system, if we want to put a stop to the wars and aggression outside America, if we want to win any of these things, then we're going to have to build a movement that won't be acceptable to corporate America, Republican or Democrat. And so we have to understand that that's what's at stake. So we can't be wedded, sort of this umbilical cord with the Democratic Party has to be, establishment has to be cut, because without that, we're not going to attain the kind of movements that we will need to push back against Trump, and we will suffer defeats. You know, so if we don't want those defeats and we want to push for further change, then we're going to have to build independent movements.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be out on the streets of Los Angeles, while I'm sure you'll be out in Seattle on Monday, May 1st. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali, and happy May Day.
Happy May Day to you. My guest is Kshama Sawant. She is a Seattle City Council member. She was the first socialist council member to be elected, affiliated with the Socialist Alternative Party. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.